Joining us now, he is the winner of the North Carolina Amateur and also the Guilford College coach, Justin Tereshko, joins us. Justin, welcome into the golf shop.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. How you guys doing?
We're doing awesome. So now, do you have some street cred with your players now that you're a North Carolina Am champion?
Yeah. You could absolutely say that. The losing by one each the last 2 years, you know, it was hard for me to preach to them how to get the job done when they were like, "Coach, you don't even know how to get the job done. How in the world can we listen to you?" So now hopefully hopefully the team can get a couple more victories next year because of that.
Yeah, you no longer have to lean on the "do as I say, not as I do" mantra.
Absolutely.
Got to be able to close it out. So this was the 57th North Carolina Amateur, and it was played out at River Run Country Club. And as you said, in 2015, you had a two-stroke lead going into the final day, and you ended up losing the title, and again in 2016. What was different for you this year that you were able to, you know, get that three-stroke lead on the final day and hold these guys off?
I think losing each of the last 2 years definitely helped me in just knowing kind of what not to do. And my putter got hot this last week for the tournament, which is normally not something that happens when I play golf. Normally I hit about 15, miss like one or two fairways, miss three or four greens, and have about 32 putts. I don't think I had more than 29 putts in any of the rounds. So when the putter gets hot, I feel pretty confident when I'm playing golf.
You say your putter got hot. Didn't I hear a story that this was a borrowed putter?
Yeah.
It's yours now?
I guess it's David Geese's putter is the one that got hot. We played during the practice round. I played with a couple guys, including David, and I was hitting it close all day, and we were playing a little skins game, and nothing was dropping. And he said, "Hey, I got this putter that I had putted with previously, just messing around a couple months ago." And I putted with it on the putting green after the practice round for about 10 minutes. And I'm like, "Screw it. We're just going to put it in play." And, you know, he's going to have a hard time getting that putter back.
Well, so let's talk about this, because I was out there doing a show live on Saturday morning. Did not get to talk to you. Unfortunately, the two guys that I talked to faded.
K.O.D.
So maybe you have me to thank for that. I don't know. But round three, you were the only guy to shoot in the 60s. You shot around a 68. The next lowest round was a couple of guys shot 70. What were conditions like on Saturday that made it so difficult, and how were you able to get away from everybody a little bit?
The conditions on Thursday and Friday were perfect. I mean, it was about low to mid 80s, no wind whatsoever. Pin locations a little easier, I would say, on Thursday and Friday. And then Saturday, it wasn't that windy, but compared to what we had played in over the last couple days, it seemed pretty windy, and it was kind of hard, and the pins were in some tricky spots. And I got hot early, making birdies, I believe, on 2, 4, 5, and then a long eagle putt on 6. So being 5 under after 6 holes definitely helped the round out. And I was just able to kind of, I guess, hold on the last 12 holes or so, because that's when the breeze really started to pick up. And, yeah, I mean, I was kind of surprised when I got in, seeing that I was the only round in the 60s. But, you know, I always tell my players that, you know, the day before the final round is moving day, and I was just fortunate enough to move up the leaderboard instead of down.
All right, so you come to 18 on Sunday, and you've just bogeyed 17, and you've got a couple shot lead. Did they move the markers way up on 18 on Sunday?
They were at the front of the back box. So okay. It was about 10 to 15 yards shorter than what we had played the first three rounds.
So they're trying to tempt you a little bit to bomb one way.
Absolutely.
Out there. So what did you do? I mean, 18 now, if you have it, for those of you listening that have never played or seen River Run, 18 is a par 5 that's kind of a risk reward. It's got water all the way down the right side. The hole kind of wraps around it, a 3-tier green. So, I mean, this is a hole that you can make eagle on.
Yeah, I tin cupped it.
And you can make a lot on. So how do you handle that, and how do you handle the pressure? I mean, you got a 2-shot lead coming to 18.
Yeah, 2-shot lead over Lansdon Robbins, who I was playing with, and he actually teed off first. He hit driver right down the middle of the fairway, and I was thinking about it, and then I decided to hit 3-wood. I actually hit it into the fairway bunker on the left because I was not going to hit it in the water. Then I laid up down there to the left about, I think I was 153 yards out, and then there was kind of a long wait for the green to clear for Lansden to try and go for it. And he ended up going for it, but he missed it right. It kind of, it wasn't that bad of a shot. It kind of missed maybe 5 yards right of the green, kicked down into the pine straw. And then sitting over my shot, I thought I would be, I thought I'd be pretty nervous knowing that, knowing myself that if I hit the green, I would most likely win the state am. And I went down to hit it expecting to be shaking, and I was calm as could be, hit it to about 12 feet and was fortunate enough to make the putt.
We're on with Justin Tereshko, the recent winner of the North Carolina Amateur and coach at Guilford College. And for those of our listeners who don't understand this, I mean, the North Carolina Am is really like an open. I mean, it's any amateur golfer who's reached his 13th birthday by the time of the championship comes around, has an active handicap that's registered with the CGA and, you know, and doesn't exceed, I think it's 7 or 7.4 or whatever, can get in this thing. So it's really amazing. On the other end of it, you get this pretty incredible trophy that I don't think you get to take home with you, which might be good because you might need to put in a, you know, some kind of addition on your house because it's ridiculously huge. But what else comes besides street cred and some swag with winning the North Carolina Amateur for you? What are the ancillary benefits?
Oh, I believe I get to play in the North Carolina Amateur for the rest of my life, I think, without having to qualify, which is kind of nice.
That's sweet.
The big trophy. This is the first year that the champion did not get to take the trophy home. I think the trophy's pretty old, so I think just make sure nothing bad happens to it. It's going to be in the CGA house at Pine Needles, I think, on display. This also would definitely helps me get into other tournaments around the country if I were to so choose to play them. Just the fact that it is the North Carolina Amateur Championship, and it definitely helps in recruiting a lot, just especially in North Carolina with almost all of the recruits that I talk to at least know who I am now because of the publicity that I've gotten for winning the golf tournament. So that definitely helps. And then same with even recruits from out of state, when they walk in to see the trophy sitting there in my office when they get in there, along with all the team trophies for the school, that it's definitely a big bonus.
Yeah, you know, I mean, Brooks Koepka won the U.S. Open and filled the trophy with Fireball. I mean, if you're filling that trophy with something, that's you could probably feed the village with that thing.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if there was enough fire. I don't know if Brooks Koepka had enough Fireball to fill that trophy.
Yeah, and I don't guess your 2 second place trophies were that impressive to recruits. So let me ask you this: you know, you are the coach at Guilford, and we actually just had a young man on, a very impressive young man, a rising senior from Belmont Abbey College earlier. I'm curious, you know, as you look at the golf landscape and recruiting, what are you seeing that junior golfers and their families need to be focusing on as they prepare to at least make a run at playing college golf?
Just being knowledgeable and being prepared. You know, it's never too early to start at least researching colleges. You know, if you're waiting till your senior year to finally make contact with a coach, that's probably going to be too late. There are a couple junior events. The CGA does a great job with the junior events and the TYGA. And I know I'm probably forgetting one or two other tours, but most of them have info sessions at some of the big tournaments that college coaches go to, and you can ask questions and things like that. And I would highly recommend anyone that's considering playing golf in college to have them and their parents or guardians or whoever's with them to go listen to the coaches that talk there. But, you know, just playing golf tournaments, multi-day tournaments are key for me. I really try not to look at just one-day tournaments such as qualifiers and things like that, because anything can happen in one day. But, you know, all the tournaments that we play in are two- or three-round tournaments, and then obviously with our national championship being the only four-round tournament we play in. But so multi-day events are key.
Well, and we all know that today's helicopter parents are straight crazy, and especially when it comes to their children playing individual sports and sort of living through the lives of their children. What kind of a balance would you give the ideally that when it comes to contact with the athlete, I'm sure you prefer to have more contact with the child than you do with the parent. What kind of advice do you have for parents who want to make sure that their child has an opportunity to be seen and be spoken to.
Oh, no, I absolutely agree with helicopter parents just recently becoming a more popular thing. And, you know, obviously I would like to be in contact with just the high schooler. But at the same time, I understand that most of the time the parents are going to pay for college, and especially at Guilford being a private liberal arts institution, you know, it's not cheap. So, you know, I do need some contact with parents, but, you know, at the end of the day, it does come down to, in most cases, you know, it's where does their son or daughter want to attend school for the, hopefully it's only 4 years, hopefully it's not more, but, you know, where do they want to spend the next 4 years of their life at? So, you know, it is important to at least have some contact with the parents, but yeah, just, you know, try to have your son or daughter do most of the have most of the interaction with the coach instead of the parent. But, you know, I do think it is important for sometimes for the coach to talk to the parent, but it's not on a weekly basis, maybe once a month basis. But, you know, the kids need to grow up. You know, right after college is the real world, and, you know, parents aren't going to be there to help them out in the real world like they are in high school and in college. So I think the bigger jump they get on that, the better.
Amen.
All right, so Justin, you mentioned that the winning the North Carolina AM obviously opens some additional doors for you. Has it changed your schedule for the summer going forward?
No, I've had my summer schedule set for quite a while. It may impact next year's summer schedule, but I'm playing in the Dogwood Invitational in Atlanta next week, and then I'm playing in the Porter Cup at the end of July, and then the Palmetto AM in August. You know, I'm not able to go play somewhere every week like all the college kids are able to do, because I do still have a job, and finishing runner up at the national championship as a team last year. You know, we're not gonna finish first by me sitting around playing golf all summer. So I do have to recruit and do certain things, so I only have three left for the next 3 months.
Yeah, it is amazing that some of these amateurs that supposedly have jobs, how much golf they actually get to play, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. I have to cram mine in about 2 months, where there are some other professional amateurs, as people like to call them, that are able to play all year round. And, you know, kudos to them for having a job that's able to do that.
Well, before we let you go, one of the questions we always ask our golfers and coaches and instructors, you know, ideally, if you have your kids going out there to practice and they only have an hour and they've got an exam in an hour and they're on the practice facility, how would you like to see them divide that time between putting and short game and on the driving range?
I would like to see about if they have an hour, about 20 minutes at each station, 20 minutes on the range, 20 minutes in the short game area, and 20 minutes putting. But most of the time, I mean, even with my guys during practice, if they do only have an hour, they typically try and spend 45 to 50 minutes on the range, and then they only have 10 to 15 minutes on the putting green and the chipping green. And to me, that doesn't make any sense, because during a round of golf, it's like 66% of your shots are going to come from inside of 125 yards. So why are you spending 80% of your time on shots outside of that? It just doesn't make any sense. So, you know, this spring I forced them to spend no more than half their time at practice on the range, and it obviously worked with us only losing by two at the national championship.
Well, Justin, we really appreciate you coming on with us, and again, now you have street cred, so there's no excuse for the players not understanding that the national championship's the ceiling now.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, guys.